Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, April 3rd. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, LIHEAP federal staffing crisis threatens energy assistance for vulnerable residents. Eureka Council affirms permit for rehab facility, and Mendocino County seeking volunteers for civil grand jury. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt County residents could face significant challenges in receiving critical energy assistance after the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services unexpectedly laid off federal workers managing the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, otherwise known as LIHEAP, according to local officials. Val Martinez, executive director of the Redwood Community Action Agency, RCAA, warns that the staffing crisis could potentially paralyze the program that assists low-income households with utility bills and heating costs.
Talked to a number of folks that I know in the business in D.C. who verified that, yeah, this did happen, and no one seems to know because there is no written plan, there's no verbalized plan on what's next from the administration or from HHS. Everything's kind of moot. So we have no idea. The worst case scenario is that although Congress has appropriated the funds for the program year 2025, the people who would normally be processing the invoices, gathering the information from the various states and collecting the data and reimbursing the states and then ultimately reimbursing local agencies like Redwood Community Action Agency aren't there and won't be there as far as we know. So we have no idea what's going to happen. We have some funds locally. It is a reimbursement program. In other words, we spend the money, and then we seek reimbursement from the state, who then in turn seeks reimbursement from the feds. So you can imagine how this has got everything all balled up. State has no more information than we do because it's pretty much radio silent.
Currently, approximately 40,000 individuals in Humboldt County qualify for LIHEAP, but funding only allows assistance to roughly 1,500 households. Martinez shared with KMUD listeners the assistance LIHEAP funding provides for applicants in Humboldt County and across the nation.
The LIHEAP program, which stands for Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, began because with the deregulation of natural gas, people were freezing to death in the mid-Atlantic and Northeast because of the high cost of fuel oil. And after so many people died that winter, it was decided that there needed to be a program to help people with their utility costs. And it was affecting people on the West Coast as well, but maybe not as dramatically as it was in those areas. And so the program was created to help low-income households with their utility bills, whether it was the purchase of firewood, propane, fuel oil, or if it was for natural gas or electricity to heat your home. So it helps pay the bill that you cannot afford to pay. And in some cases, people have shut-off notices, and we help prevent them from getting shut off by paying the amount due in order to restore their services or to maintain their services. And with folks with firewood, propane, fuel oil, we help purchase the stuff so that they have that commodity available to help them throughout the winter months.
RCAA has an outreach program for homebound seniors and disabled households, ensuring the most vulnerable populations have energy and heating assistance.
And every year we allow them to go on a list, and then we have outreach specialists that deal specifically to those populations so that they don't get overlooked.
The funding locally relies on a reimbursement process where local agencies spend funds and then seek state and federal reimbursement. That funding could be severely disrupted.
The state has done a good job thus far keeping up with reimbursements, but at some point It's going to catch up with the state, and it's going to catch up with local service providers, and it'll catch up with us at some point if there's no one there on the federal level to be processing those invoices and reimbursing the states. Although it's not the same as the order that was placed at the end of January where they wanted to make stop payments, it could potentially have that same effect.
A recent letter from a LIHEAP recipient highlighted the dire situation of some Humboldt County residents and the benefits of the LIHEAP program.
Recently, I got a letter from an 85-year-old woman. She wanted to thank us for helping her because she was saying how she's done everything possible to try to cut her costs. And this included like taking a shower once a week and doing everything possible, going to bed early, not using her heat, or minimizing the amount of heat that she uses. And even with that, she was struggling to keep up. And she was asking us, who can I write to? Who can I talk about this? And we told her, well, you can write to Congressman Huffman and let him know how important this program is to you and ask that he support it. And she did. She wrote a beautiful letter to him, and we forwarded it also to our federal advocate so that they could share that with others. And I think that if anybody is concerned about it, I would suggest that they do the same.
While the full impact remains unknown, the California Department of Community Services and Development reached out to service providers like RCAA and stated as of April 3rd, the CSD still had access to the Federal Health and Human Services Payment Management Services and had submitted the weekly drawdown. The department continues to monitor access to all grant awards on a daily basis to ensure access to funds remain on their normal schedule. CSD stated they'd update providers if reimbursement delays or access was compromised. KMUN News will be following up with local and state reps as the impacts of the federal layoffs become clear. The Eureka City Council has upheld a permit for a substance use recovery center in the city's Henderson Center area. Daniel Mintz reports.
A residential drug and alcohol use rehab facility planned for Eureka's Henderson Center neighborhood has overcome a permit appeal and will focus on providing recovery services for women. Most of those who spoke during the Eureka City Council's April 1st hearing on the permit appeal enthusiastically supported the project, saying it will provide much-needed recovery services. Sited at 309 Harris Street on the corner of Harris and D Streets, the facility will include a main residential house with two other buildings for an office and individual and group counseling areas. A conditional use permit for the project was approved by the city's planning commission last February, and the decision was appealed by a group of five appellants who also gathered 75 signatures on a petition. The North Coast Substance Abuse Council plans a residential rehab center for up to 12 people, and Wesley Harrison, the nonprofit group's executive director, said there's acute need for recovery services for women, including pregnant women. And he said the aim is to improve quality of life.
What we want to do is produce a sober community, a safer and healthier community. That's our goal. What I will say to the community behind me is we all know that substance use is a problem. It's the one thing we can agree on here today, no matter which side you're sitting on today. And if we can agree that it's a problem, what I will say is this. I'm not asking you to donate money to our agency for us to do what we do. I'm not asking you to open your doors to the people we serve. I'm not asking you to do the work that is going to be needed to help this issue. But what I am asking is that you allow us to use our money that we have scrimped and saved over the last 4 years to do this project. I'm asking you that you let us open our doors to these people. And I'm asking that you let us do the work that we've been doing in this community for the last 50 years.
There weren't many arguments against that during the hearing's public comment period. Several people, including other care service providers, said they're pleased women's services will be offered. A woman who said her work is, quote, in drug treatment, emphasized the importance of recovery care.
Right now, well, pretty much since I've been working here for the last 2 years, if someone is in need of inpatient treatment, it is pretty much impossible to get them into an inpatient program within the time that they're willing to go to inpatient treatment, because someone can change their mind so quickly. And right now, especially, we've been sending people to Ukiah because there is nowhere here. And also that program that you talked about, New Life Recovery Center, which is a fantastic program. In order to be eligible to go there, you need to have graduated from a treatment program of some kind or be actively engaged in treatment. So all of those amazing beds that we have that are available for people who are in need of housing, they don't qualify for it unless they've graduated from somewhere like Wes's program or are already enrolled in some sort of program, which there are not a lot of options here.
The appeal argued that the main house is a historic structure that demands review under the California Environmental Quality Act, and a rehab facility is incompatible with the neighborhood. Longtime Henderson Center resident Thea Stewart, one of the appellants, questioned the facility's siting, saying, quote, "Henderson Center has a large percentage of retired senior citizens and, of course, some families. I do not find this facility suitable." But staff told council members a historic building can be exempted from CEQA, and the project is consistent with the area's zoning and neighborhood commercial land use designation. Councilmember Katie Moulton related her experience with those who need help.
This whole conversation has brought up how many people I have known in my life who have lost their battle with addiction, including some people who were waiting to get into a facility, and how common it is for people to end up overdosing in the last 48 hours before they get in. And when that spark happens and somebody says, I want to get my life right now, that's when you need to take advantage of that and give them that opportunity, because any delay can cause people to cause that monkey, that demon, to get right back on top of them.
The council's vote to support the Planning Commission permit approval and deny the appeal was unanimous. Harrison said the new facility won't offer detox services, and he described it as a facility to, quote, "help individuals who have achieved sobriety and are in remission to help them maintain that sobriety in a supervised, structured setting." He expects the new facility to open in early 2027. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Turning to Mendocino, every year the Mendocino County Superior Court recruits Mendocino citizens to volunteer for a one-year appointment as civil grand jurors. The Mendocino County Civil Grand Jury, composed of 19 members plus alternates, performs important citizen oversight of local government. KMUD News spoke with Kim Turner, the executive court officer, about the importance of the civil grand jury.
We're recruiting for the incoming 25-26 grand jury, which will start July 1st. Every year, the court impanels and the grand jury provide service for an entire year and looks at a variety of different topics. So I made a list of the things that the grand jury has reported on and I think have been taken to heart, especially by the County of Mendocino. The grand jury has the power to investigate any local governmental entity, whether it's a county, a special district, a school district, a city, but the vast majority of the reports are directed at the County of Mendocino. And in the last couple of years, they did a comprehensive look at the Family and Children's Services Program in HHSA, and also at the County Human Resources, which since the pandemic, many local governments are struggling with employee recruitment and retention. So they looked at some of those factors and some of the things like pay equity and, you know, issues of compensation, issues of representation. And so those reports were well received by the County of Mendocino. The board actually accepted many of the recommendations of the grand jury and is implementing changes in those departments to address some of the deficiencies that were noted in those reports.
A Pew Research Center study in 2024 found that though government trust had improved slightly in 2023, only 22% of the American public trusted the government to do what was right most of the time or more. Turner stated that the civil grand jury can provide much-needed transparency to county residents.
Well, the grand jury is an amazing vehicle for that very thing. So unlike boards that are appointed by politicians or other types of entities, the grand jury is a much more organic process, and it's comprised of ordinary citizens who are interested in their communities and interested in government. So the fact that the grand jury steps up, that 19 members take on a variety of topics and then report out to the community, those reports are always published, they're public. And they, I think, really shine a light on these functional areas of government, some of which are working well. Sometimes the grand jury writes a report and says, you know, this particular organization is running pretty smoothly. We found this little thing here or that little thing there. But overall, you know, the public should have confidence in this particular agency or entity. Sometimes they find that there are problems that they didn't even intend to discover, and the reports can be lengthy and there can be a number of recommendations. But this is the beauty of the grand jury, is that the local citizens are actually doing the legwork and determining how they think government is functioning on their behalf.
Turner said serving on the civil grand jury is a stimulating process to ensure that the Mendocino County government is fulfilling its potential to serve its citizens responsibly and its mission to provide critical services to all Mendocino residents, highlighting civil oversight as intended by the framers of the California Constitution.
The framers of the California Constitution really enshrined in the Constitution the idea of citizen oversight. It goes right back to the bedrock of our California Constitution, this idea of serving and giving back to your communities and making sure that the community is responding to its citizens.
When asked about the topic selection of the civil grand jury's focuses, Turner said,
"It comes from a variety of sources. It can come from letters that the grand jury receives from private citizens. It can come from grand jurors themselves who may have an area or an issue that they've heard about in the community that they want to look into. It could be something topical where, you know, a particular department has been in the press a lot recently and the grand jury wants to do a little more of a deeper dive into whatever that issue may be. So the grand jury has complete discretion as to what topics it decides it wants to investigate. The court and the judge in our court is Judge Ann Moorman, who is sort of the liaison for the grand jury. If they have legal questions, if they have questions of ethical questions or propriety questions, they can certainly go to her with those questions. The only entity that the grand jury cannot investigate is the court itself. The grand jury by law is not permitted to investigate the work of the court. And I'm sure that's because of the ethical concern about the court is appointing the grand jury, so you can't have the grand juries investigating the court.
Those volunteers selected to serve agree to fulfilling the time obligations that Turner says varies during different parts of the process.
The process starts with an orientation in July. So once we have assembled our new grand jurors, we need 19 people to impanel the grand jury. So we're looking for applicants right now. You can volunteer yourself. You can contact a neighbor, a friend, a relative, and ask them to volunteer. It is a significant time commitment at different points of the year. 20-hour a week kind of a job at the beginning. Then it's maybe 10 to 15 hours a week in the middle. And then as you get toward the end of the grand jury's year, when you're report writing, it can be 20, 25 hours a week at that point.
Each civil grand jury determines not only their topics of investigation, but how the civil grand jury body works.
So every grand jury has its own, I'm going to call it personality. So some of them operate on a majority vote kind of a process. Some of them operate on a consensus process. Some of them have four persons that are really like a sort of a formal leadership structure. Some of them are an informal leadership structure. So we are never in the room and we do not participate in helping the grand jury determine what it's going to investigate. And that process is a closed and confidential process. Each grand jury comes up with its own method of evaluating the various topics that they might investigate and then determining how many they're going to take on, what the breadth and scope of those investigations is going to entail.
According to Turner, the varied skills of the 19 selected jurors are an attribute to the civil grand jury.
What we find is with 19 people, we always have folks that are good writers. We have people that are really good at looking at spreadsheets. We have people that are really good at analyzing information. It's definitely a collaborative process and a team effort. So I think people naturally find the things that they're good at and they focus on those things. The things like, if you're not a strong writer, then there is always a strong writer or two or three on the grand jury that will do the report writing part of this. But there are plenty of other things to do. Plenty of other legwork to be done, field work in the community to be done. And we're just looking for people that really are interested in good government, are interested in making sure that our government is responsive to its citizens, and they bring that kind of noble charge to the grand jury.
Those interested in learning more about the process or in volunteering for the 25-26 civil grand jury can find additional information online.
So if you are interested in applying, you can go either to the County of Mendocino's website or to the court's website. The application is available online. You can either complete it online and submit it, or you can download it and print it and handwrite it and bring it on in or mail it in. We are accepting applications all the way up until June 20th this year, and the application period opened this week. So please encourage yourself, your friends, your family members, your neighbors, to consider serving. It is a time commitment, but I think it is really well worth the time and effort. And if you talk to any of the grand jurors who have served in the past, I think they would tell you it's a rewarding experience.
The application may also be obtained in person at the court located at 100 North State Street, room 303 in Ukiah, or by calling the grand jury at 707-463-4320. In state news, Dem Cory Booker holds Senate floor for record 25 hours, 5 minutes to disrupt Senate in protest of Trump attack on people and democracy. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports on this historic moment.
These are, without doubt, strange and unprecedented times for the U.S. government. And Democratic Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey rose to the occasion with the longest speech in Senate history.
So tonight, I rise with the intention of getting in some good trouble. I rise with the intention of disrupting the normal business of the United States Senate for as long as I am physically able. I rise tonight because I believe sincerely that our country is in crisis.
He talked about the Trump administration's actions on many fronts, from budget cuts to health care to the assault on democracy. He says institutions that are special are being recklessly attacked and even shattered.
In just 71 days, the President of the United States has inflicted so much harm on Americans' safety, financial stability, the core foundations of our democracy, and even our aspirations as a people for, from our highest offices, a sense of common decency.
He began speaking on the Senate floor Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and he kept on speaking. Senator Dick Durbin is a Democrat from Illinois. He was one of a number of Democratic senators who gave Booker a break by asking a question, allowing Booker some relief without having to give up the floor.
Thank you. I first want to acknowledge this extraordinary moment in the history of the Senate. I believe you've been holding the floor now for more than 10 hours.
But Booker did not stop at 10 hours.
We have laid out what they're trying to do, 20 hours. I want to stand more, and I will, but I'm begging people, don't let this be another normal day in America. Please, God, don't let them take Medicaid away from 10, 20, 30, or 40 million Americans who desperately need it. Don't let them do it.
Booker's speech was not technically a filibuster because he was not using the speech to try to block action on a bill. Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota saw Booker in a different role, noting that when she woke up Tuesday morning, he was still speaking and giving people hope.
When I think about what you're doing, you're like an alarm clock right now for this country. And slowly but surely, we've seen people realize this isn't just a bunch of campaign rhetoric that's going on. This is actually happening. And people are stepping up. They're fighting it in the courts. They're fighting it in Congress with what you're doing today.
By news time, Booker's speech had lasted more than 24 hours, longer than the previous record, Republican Senator Strom Thurmond's 24-hour speech in 1957 to filibuster the Civil Rights Act. Booker, however, invoked people like civil rights icon and Democratic lawmaker John Lewis, as well as Republican Senator John McCain, who had cast a crucial vote to save the Affordable Care Act. And he also invoked future generations, who he says will look back on what John Lewis called good trouble.
I believe generations from now will look back at this moment and have a single question. Where were you? Where were you when our country was in crisis and when American people were asking for help? Help me. Help me. Did we speak up?
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In national news, Trump announces Liberation Day tariffs on imports. Opponents call it Recession Day. Christopher Martinez brings you the details.
President Donald Trump has followed through on his promise to announce a new round of tariffs on goods from other countries, despite complaints that it could raise prices for U.S. consumers, ignite a trade war, and even lead to a recession. Trump made his announcement in the White House Rose Garden.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day, waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again. Going to make it wealthy, good and wealthy.
The new tariffs include a 10% baseline tax on imports from all countries and higher tariffs on nations that run a trade surplus with the United States. Those higher tariffs include a 34% tax on imports from China and 20% on imports from the European Union. And at midnight, he says there'll be a 25% tariff on all foreign-made automobiles. Trump is declaring a national economic emergency to launch the tariffs, which are expected to produce hundreds of billions of dollars in annual revenues. Longtime trading partners are preparing their own countermeasures in response. Trump used rather aggressive language in his announcement, talking about foreign cheaters and foreign scavengers that have, in his words, ransacked our factories, stolen our jobs. He also said they were absolutely filthy.
Our country and its taxpayers have been ripped off for more than 50 years, but it is not going to happen anymore. It's not going to happen. In a few moments, I will sign a historic executive order instituting reciprocal tariffs on countries throughout the world. Reciprocal, that means they do it to us and we do it to them. Very simple. Can't get any simpler than that. This is one of the most important days, in my opinion, in American history. It's our declaration of economic independence.
Trump's actions come despite vocal opposition from foreign leaders who warn of a trade war, from economic experts who raise fears of a recession, from Democratic lawmakers, and even from some members of his own party. Trump calls April 2nd Liberation Day, but opponents of the tariffs have some different names. Ottawa's Premier Doug Ford spoke on NBC News.
You know, President Trump ran on growing the economy, creating jobs, and that's not going to happen. It's going to hurt the American economy. I don't call it Liberation Day for Americans. I call it Termination Day, because there are people going to be laid off. Assembly lines will shut down. You can't just cut off your largest customer in the world, and that's Canada.
House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York blasted Trump's tariffs at his weekly press briefing shortly before Trump's White House event.
Republicans are crashing the American economy in real time and driving us to a recession. This is not Liberation Day, it's Recession Day in the United States of America. That's what the Trump tariffs are going to do. Crash the economy, which has been happening since January 20th of this year.
Senate Democrats also weighed in. Democratic Senate leader Chuck Schumer cited opposition to tariffs from Republicans like Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. He calls Trump's tariffs absurd, crazy, chaotic.
Why would Trump do this? Why would Trump do this? One reason. He wants to take the money that he gains from tariffs to give tax cuts to billionaires. And when told that American families would have a great, would pay a whole lot more out of their pockets, you know what he said? I don't care. What kind of bubble is this man and his billionaire cohorts in?
Democratic Senator Angela Alsobrooks of Maryland also took aim at the tariff announcement.
President Trump has dubbed today Liberation Day. And I continue to think how tone deaf and how arrogant it is, because I'm asking myself, for whom? You know, who's liberated? And
Elon
I think
Musk.
Elon Musk.
Alsobrooks has introduced a tariff transparency bill, saying if tariffs are only a minor pain for Americans, prove it. Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia is sponsoring a bill to roll back the tariffs on Canada, and Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins says she will vote for it. It remains to be seen how those measures will fare in Congress. It also remains to be seen how other countries respond to the American tariffs. We probably won't have to wait long to see their response. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Patricia Tinkler, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz and Christopher Martinez. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Lisa Music.